I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast with me, Paul Machin, Steve Hoare, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Clubb, in the aftermath of Liverpool and Diogo Jota basically making Tottenham Hotspur cry. It's great, it's a wonderful world to live in, particularly because of the vociferous celebrations that followed their match-winning equaliser that they got. What? So good. Is there ever been... I mean, we did on Thursday Night Pint last week, Steve, like the most hated rival players. And Richarlison was in there, and I was like, I didn't really feel it on Richarlison until he walked on the pitch and the whole of Anfield erupted in a chorus of boos, and I was ready to have him right at the top of that list. And now he's back to being a little bit of the joke figure that he should be.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. I didn't want that script because at 3-0 I wanted us to beat them 10-0 or whatever. Yeah. But before the game you said, here's what's going to happen. Beat your hand off. Richarlison's going to get his top off, celebrate, show everyone his tattoo of his face on his own back, and then shush the crowd, dance like a pigeon, and then 60 seconds later be hands on heads because they've lost. I'd have paid all the money in the world for it. It's just absolutely glorious. The fact that lad scored 3 goals. Well, he's been booked 3 times this season for taking his top off. Two have been disallowed, and one was that. Yeah. Like, everything about it is just, it's just the best. Everything about it is just the absolute best. And it somehow manages to be Everton and Spursy at the same time.
Yeah.
And that is the absolute brilliant, most brilliant thing about it. It's the highlight of the season. It's better than Everton 7-0 against Man United.
They've married up, yeah, that's it. They've taken something, they've taken the most everything ever and married it with being Spursy, Chloe, and you've delivered on Richarlison pigeon celebrating his way to tears.
Yeah, it was absolutely boss. I remember like 3-3, you were just, the ground was absolutely fuming. Yeah, people did walk out. I remember fuming and I thought it just had to be him. His bleach white hair, I was like, oh, for God's sake. He was using a steward as someone to like hold himself up, going mental in their away crowd as if he hadn't scored only one goal this season in the Premier League for Spurs. And I was absolutely livid. And all of a sudden, Lucas Moura steps up and just passes Diogo Jota the ball. And like, if there's anyone in that position in Liverpool that I want it to be, it's going to be Diogo Jota.
Yeah.
The finish is underrated. I've not heard anyone speak about it. It's a brilliant finish. And the fact that he told the crowd, the cop, to calm down and then sat down and played his FIFA. I was like, oh my God.
You can relate to that, can't you?
Yeah, I can. Yeah,
very much so, yeah.
game of
Chloe. Me and Weekend League.
It's just the whole thing, Dan, is delicious. Like, it's just, you watch it because I've actually almost watched Spurs' celebrations more than I've watched that goal.
Yeah.
Because it's everything. It's like the bench emptying, it's Son jumping up and fist pumping the crowd, and he then comes over to do the little pigeon thing. Mm-hmm.
It's like watching people getting on the Titanic in hindsight.
You know what's coming, yeah. There's a certain sweetness to it, isn't there, now you're watching them back? Yeah.
It's like someone mentioned, remember obviously the Real Madrid game, and me and Errol went mental at 2-0, and it went viral because, look at these idiots celebrating.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, well, in the moment, we never knew what was going to come.
No.
But when you know what's coming, I can see why people are getting great delight out of it. Like, I got loads of stick for that one. Like, you know, when Salah gets the second, when Courtois just did it off him. It was a bit like that. When you watch it in hindsight, knowing what's about to happen, you spot more things. Because at the time, it was just head in hand, gutted, like, you can't believe that this idiot of all people has just done that to us, and then knowing what's coming,
it felt like it was always going to be him. You know, when he came on, and you're like, oh, yeah, it would be him to score the goal. But now it's come full circle, you go, couldn't happen to a bigger prick. It couldn't have happened to, and it was just so, so sweet. And you're right, the combination of Everton and Spurs combining to produce that beautiful moment at Anfield, it's so, so sweet. And Chloe's right, by the way, on Jota, like the calmest man in the stadium, probably in Liverpool at the time, as we're all losing our minds, heart rate are through the roof. What a bloke. But like I say, Richarlison, it's just so beautiful.
You know what made it even better though? All these Everton Twitter pages, Richarlison,
Richie lad!
Yeah. And the watch along stuff, the Tottenham watch along, and that fan in the crowd today. I don't know if you've seen that video of him giving it the big, and it's beautiful, mate. It really is.
All of them, I mean, expressions faking all of his celebrations was a bit odd, but the twins from, I think it's We Are Tottenham, brilliant. You know what I mean? Two people born out of the same womb, we couldn't be less in sync, by the way, when it comes to the literally, they're as close as you can get to being one person, and they couldn't even do a high 10 in the middle of
it's there's still time for a winner here. That's the line that does me. Yeah, you're right, there is. Yeah,
the thing that sums it up is that bit at the end where they just, I'm paraphrasing, but it's on the lines of like this, like, What are you doing to us, Tottenham? You know what I mean? It's like this football club, Tottenham Hotspur. It's like, and it's just like all he's basically there is encapsulated everything it is to be a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and the idea that they feel like they're going, they're one of the greatest comebacks in Premier League
that
history, and then they basically throw it away in the final minute. So
my head, they're all watching on the watch along as well. Bloody hell, that was just an experience. I've never seen a man get from 1 to 100. Back to north, back to 100 again in a minute.
He didn't even celebrate though when the goal had went in, and then once you'd like screamed, that's when he stood up.
I think he droned out.
Yeah.
And then he just starts pointing at his crotch.
He offered someone to suck something at some point.
He told Richarlison to suck his nuts. Basically, it was quite the event. But like I say, right, when we had that show on Thursday Night Pint, this rankings of hated players, I wanted Richarlison higher.
Yeah.
I hate him. Him, Bernardo Silva and Bruno Fernandes were the three that I was adamant needed to be top of that list. And I don't know if that makes him go higher or lower on this list, but it's on the funniest things that have happened in Liverpool. There's loads of them. Pickford's against Everton. Mm-hmm. This one, there's just so many really hilarious things. Ronaldo's goal offside.
Really rattled through it. There you go.
Ronaldo's
goal. Lisandro Martinez won the other way this season.
There's just sometimes it's just, you've got to accept that you're a meme. And Van Dijk got a little bit on the first goal, but Richarlison's getting it now. The content on social media last night was, that's when Twitter and Instagram and all, it's at its absolute best. When everyone's in on it and it's all of this. And I can't even say I feel sorry for him in any way, shape or form. He's got a life-size tattoo of his own face on his back. He deserves every single part of this, and it's glorious, and I love it, and it's amazing.
He is the Alan Partridge super fan, except for himself.
It's him, Neymar and Ronaldo. It's just the best, man. It's just glorious.
What a weirdo. It's just a great game of football, ultimately, because we won. It would have been a very different tone to everything if we'd just drawn that game at the end. It really genuinely would have been, and I'm not sure how much it affects the overall picture of the league, other than, you know, we've moved up into fifth, which I think is certainly a good thing. Dan, it was just like, it was like a classic Liverpool big Anfield game. You know, mm-hmm. We threatened it with Real Madrid, of course, but there's a time of 3-0, you're thinking, well, yeah, this is it, you know, which is going to be a 4, 5, 6, how many are we going to score? But actually, in the end, it goes back to being what we've kind of suspected about this team. It's far more of a 17-18 Liverpool classic blitz than a 18-19 and beyond one.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And I think kind of all the problems and the beauty of our season were kind of encapsulated within that 90-odd minutes, weren't they? Because we were brilliant for a little bit, and then we were really poor for a little bit, and we were really poor was at the back, I think, moreover. And I think, we were definitely sort of master architects of our own downfall in the fact that we allowed them into the game. We gave them confidence. I mean, they kind of, to be fair to Tottenham, like, as much as we're all laughing at them today, and rightfully so, like, the little bit of hope that we did give them, particularly in the first half, they did take that and run with it, and they did come on to us, and we did, I suppose, allow them to have a sniff in the game when really, I think at 3-0, I think we all thought there's going to be refunds getting given out here for these away fans.
Yeah.
And I think we all thought this could be 7, 8, 9, whatever, cricket score sort of territory, which I know you said in the ground. But yeah, I think in terms of us, there are still problems there quite clearly. We should be conceding 3 goals at home, let's put it that way, if we're going to be brutally honest about it. But like I say, it does kind of just sum up our season and has been a little bit nuts. But like you say, Anfield does that. Anfield produces their moments. It's Newcastle 4-3 from all them years ago, all over. We have those moments in us.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know what was surprising about this game that I haven't seen in a long time is the year we won the league, it was a never say never die attitude. It was a go until the end. It was a never give up. And I've not seen that this season. When we've collapsed or crumbled, we've carried on doing it. We've not picked ourselves up. We've not reacted. And yet we get a little bit lucky with the ball from Lucas Moura. But it's the anticipation. Yeah. And it's the way that he's dragged that moment. He's became the hero. He's stepped up. I've not seen that at all this season.
Yeah. I think it's what's interesting about that, because the thing that's been kind of ticking around my head is it's the lads that we've bought in to reboot the squad are the ones who aren't burned out and jaded, and they've not been running 1,000 miles a week for the last like 5 years. They're the ones who are actually helping us get out of this at the back end of the season. Yep. You know, even like someone like Harvey Elliott coming in, not a brilliant 90 minute performance, but that's just a good first half. He's part of the good things that we do. Curtis Jones coming in as a young player, desperate to go and prove himself. Cody Gakpo, new signing, absolutely donning it in the false nine for us. Luis Diaz, another, and you could go through it. These are the lads that are carrying the team, as they should be. And that's the thing about Thiago Jota. Yeah, his head's not done in, because it's not like he's got something to prove. He's hungry. You know, he's had loads of time out with injuries. He just wants to get on the pitch and score goals. And now he's in a world where he's gone from starting a few, he's on the bench for this one. He knows that he just needs to take his chance. And that's the thing that offers me most encouragement. I totally agree with you, Chloe. It was a thing I referenced. We needed to prove we can win this way. Because it's all well and good winning 7-0, but you don't learn anything from a 7-0 win other than your opponent is probably a bit shit or has got a bit of a weak mentality. There's more to winning. We learned more winning that 4-3 than we would have done if it had stayed 3-2, I think.
Yeah, maybe. What it does show me is Liverpool are starting to be resilient again. So, you know, going 1-0 down at West Ham and coming back to win. When was the last time we've done that away from home? This one before Forest get two back against us and the Edge don't fall off, they go and get the winner. So they are showing a bit of that about them. They haven't just rolled over and had the bellies tickled, because they did. I'd say, you know, just post World Cup and a bit before it as well, I was at Brighton when we got ran off the park and no one even put a tackle in. Yeah. And, you know, Wolves away and Brentford, we looked weak. So to show a little bit of bottle and a bit of something about it, it is great to see. There are still problems. It's not perfect. That's why you're fifth. You know, Dan's right. That should be a 7-0. It can't be. It can never get to 3-3. It shouldn't happen. So there's still things to work on. But I get your point in that. Like this, you called it Klopp 2.0 a few times when we've had conversations and stuff. And if it starts to feel a bit like that, in that, we are moving away. Mo Salah aside and Trent Alexander-Arnold, they're, you know, the two mainstays. The other lads who are of that ilk really aren't having their best. You know, even the goalkeeper's having a little bit of a wobble at the minute. Van Dijk's looking a bit shaky. Anthony Robertson's looking a little bit on edge. Henderson the same. But then you look at, you know, it's Jones and it's Gakpo and it's Diaz and it's Jota. They're the ones who are really, obviously Trent just being amazing as well as helping, but It's the new breed almost stepping up. And at some point, Liverpool, we're going to keep harking back to it, is that team's not, it's not a thing anymore. This is the new Liverpool now. We are Jürgen's second phase of all this. He built one and it was amazing. He's now fully invested in this second one. And he's clearly got the players. Some more of them are needed, I think that's, but like, Liverpool aren't the absolute tire fire disaster that some people were saying they are. They've got the goalie, they've got the right back. They've got the centre-backs, a couple of them, I think, still. They've got the left-back, they've got Trent, they've got Gak, they've got the front, all five of the forwards I'm absolutely sound with. Curtis Jones is emerging as a definite, if not guaranteed, starter in the future, who knows, at least a really decent squad option. It isn't as bad as hopefully we thought. And like I said the other day, I said this to Neil Jones on my show, it's like, I'm the star of that show, if you can finish fifth in your absolute worst season ever, which it feels like it has been at times, that is something to build on. I don't think you're million miles. They've got work to do in the summer, but if this is the level of how crap it gets, then that's in a weird way, that's quite encouraging, because you just think, add the right players.
Perspective matters on that, because it's the thing. A 3-3 draw for Tottenham yesterday feels like a win for them, because they've come from three goals down, and that's the thing. Fifth will rationalise that, you know, at the end of the season, because if we go in on a 9-game winning streak or a 11-game unbeaten streak or whatever it ends up being, then that's something you can carry into the season. Whereas if you finish fifth on the back of losing loads of games and you continue that up and down form, there's nothing to say it's not going to carry on next season, that kind of thing. I agree with that. And again, its perspective is the important thing for me, Chloe, because all of a sudden, mentioned Curtis Jones, I thought he was brilliant. Okay. And I think he's more than held his own in these last few games. And now we're in a world where I know Thiago got injured again, but like Thiago's not been starting even when he has been fit. Jordan Henderson's benched in that one as well. And James Milner, they're now the lads who are coming into the team, and that's the way it should be. We're talking about like Klopp 2.0. You might need to go in the transfer window and actually get by better than Jones and Elliott and Fabinho, for example, in the midfield. But actually, you're starting a game with a 29-year-old DM. You're starting with a 22-year-old guy, you know, playing on the left side of the three box, whatever you want to call it, and then Harvey Elliott's 19, 20. That's a rebooted side. And then what's meant to happen is the guys you were in the first team, they're the ones who are understudying it now. It feels like, yeah, we are looking at next season's, more like next season's side than the side that's gone before.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we all know that we need midfielders in this transfer window, but it's midfielders for competition, because if Curtis Jones keeps playing the way he is, then he deserves a spot in the team. He deserves a say. He was man of the match the other day. He was the best player on the park. And he's been, you know, I remember he came in against Chelsea. It was an absolute horrific game of footy to watch, but I came away from it thinking that he was the only one who could really hold, you know, keep his head up. And from there, he's just every run of games that he's being able to play in, you know, he's done really well in. You'd also look at it, Curtis Jones was the last midfield sub against West Ham. Henderson came off before him, mm-hmm. and yet Henderson's not starting. It's Curtis Jones who we've asked to go again and again and again, yeah. and we're putting trust in him, and rightfully so. And
Same again yesterday. He took Hendo off before he took Curtis. So he'd done it very late, wasn't it? I think he wanted Milner on the pitch to try and
because he's young and whilst he's fit, he's fresh.
And he hasn't played that much footy this season. Exactly. Yeah. That's six games on the spin now where he started, and like I say, he's probably got better throughout, you know, as you go through, he's gone better and better and better. So he's got everything you need, I think, to be whatever he wants. It's how it goes. He might end up being a regular player, he might end up being a squad player, but when it was bad and we just couldn't wait for the season to end, I don't know if it was almost like, let's see what we've got with him, let's have a look what we've got, give him the end of the season and he might be great, or you know what, you might finally find out he's fit but he just isn't good enough, and maybe that ultimatum's been laid down that I'm going to, like, if you want to be here next season, mate, you've got to go and earn it. You can't just have a Liverpool spot because you're a scouser. Hmm. You've got to go and play and earn it. And to be fair, Dan, he's done it.
There was talk of even sort of putting him in the shop window a little bit when he loans first got introduced to the side, yeah, to try and get some more value to him in terms of the summer or a loan deal, like you say. But credit to him, he's absolutely taken this chance he's been given and ran with it. He's been superb. And like Chloe says, I think he's got better and better every performance. He's been consistently really good. And it kind of dawned on me yesterday, just on the role he's playing, because obviously we've seen a little bit of it now, and I think he is playing the Wijnaldum role. It's been said a lot, but it's interesting because there's a lot of comparisons there in many senses, because Wijnaldum, when he went away with Holland, liked to go and express himself and do more forward, and Curtis Jones in an ideal world would also be doing that, but he's following Jurgen Klopp's instructions, not just to stay in the side, but for the good of the side, and he's doing it brilliantly. He's probably sort of curbing his natural instincts to go and be more creative. Yes, he gets his goal yesterday, but he's actually willing to do the hard yards. He's willing to be that presser and do that work instead. And like Chloe says, at the minute it's his shirt and it's up to Thiago and whoever we sign for that matter to come and take it off him, because it's been outstanding.
That's the thing with transfers is I want... So you've got the experienced players, the Hendersons, the Milners. I don't know where the Milner's going to go, but you've got the midfielders, Thiago there, who... When whoever we bring in, and even the likes of Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott, they should be the ones who are helping them through this. You don't need to help us as much on the pitch when you need it, then yeah, but you're the one in the dressing room who's helping absolutely every single person out. Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott don't have a lot of experience. I'd like someone to come in with a bit more experience. Yeah. Champions League football, maybe, you know, still young, that we can breed them in and they can have a long career at Liverpool, but have a little bit more experience than Curtis Jones, because that can help him out as well. You can't going to have four 19 to 20 year olds with hardly any experience. That's not going to work. So you've got these three banks. You've got Henderson, your Thiago, your Fabinho, who are your really experienced one at all, can help you through. You've got the developers, which are Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones, Stefan Bajetic. And then you've got the middle bank, who have a little bit of either Premier League, Champions League, wherever experience, who are in the middle and use both of them to help.
That's what we're missing, isn't it?
Sorry, the middle gap. And also, I don't even want to touch it now, mate. I don't want to hijack a show, but like the Thiago thing is a thing now. Like, you cannot rely on that fella. No. We are at Daniel Sturridge levels of when he's playing a sound, but do not have any expectation that fella's going to be fit. It's just another injury. It's almost, I think, I might be wrong, that he would have played. I think Harvey's playing because Hendo's knackered and it should have been Thiago and he's injured. We are at a point now where he is just a complete luxury. And I think when he's fit and firing, he's brilliant. And we saw this with latter end Daniel Sturridge even. He was still really, really good when he could get on the pitch. You just couldn't bank on him. Was it it was 14, 15, 16, that range when all our hopes just pinned on this fella. Mm-hmm. And you can't have it. And if you're looking ahead towards the summer, you've got to almost take him out of the equation. I mean, when Jürgen, at the start of the season, he started listing like Chamberlain and Keita, and I was like, never plays. Yeah. You can add Thiago into that mix now. So Chloe's right. Yeah. Milner looks like these reports with Brighton and Burnley might have something in them. So Thiago's got to almost be out the equation. Now he's just a bonus if you've got him. You've got to build a squad, presuming he's not fit. And I wonder, again, I don't know what the resource like available, whatever. Would they even sell him? Potentially, if someone fancied it. You know what I mean? I don't know where we're at with him, but if you throw all this into the mix, and that's why Curtis Jones definitely should be in next season.
I mean,
and he will be, and he should be. He's earned it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the answer is no, because you'd be stupid to sell it when you're already losing two midfielders on free transfers. You don't need to then make another problem for yourself.
Milner, Keita, Ox.
Well, yeah, if Milner goes. The good thing that you got there is an opportunity for someone like, and Harvey Elliott was talking about, I think he was interviewed in the Mix Zone by The Echo and was saying, don't mind other players coming in because it just means it's a challenge and it gives you, you get the chance to push for more. And I think we have this expectation sometimes when players come in because there's a lot of like buzz around certain names within there. So let's just say Alexis McAllister is an example there. Like, well, he'll come in and he'll definitely be better than what we've already got. He might be, you know, because he fits into what you're saying there, Chloe. He's got some more Premier League experience. He's got World Cup winning experience to go with it. But that's the challenge laid down. And we've seen this happen previously, is when Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita come in, now there's a variety of other reasons, fitness being one of the predominant ones. But Gini Wijnaldum, Jordan Henderson step up and actually get to a point where they remain in the team on merit, and that's the next challenge for Curtis Jones. His challenge for the rest of the season, stay in the side. Mm-hmm. Make that your shirt, and then when some other lad comes in the summer who wants that shirt, then you're in a real fight for it, because actually we're benefiting from competition already. Again, look at Diogo Jota. He's come back into the team. You've now got him, effectively Darwin Nunez, him and Diaz fighting for a place. Gakpo's going to start the vast majority of football matches. And look at the hunger that it's gonna build out in them. And what happens is they don't want to stay and fight for the place, but they never had the right mentality in the first place. And Liverpool's history is littered with footballers who saw their arse when we signed someone else and moved on and ended up having a career. And I'm rather naming names, you can read all Cy Hughes' books from like the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. There's a half of it dedicated to a lad who went, probably should have just stuck it out and had a real fight for it. But instead, I went and played lower end Premier League, and then I'm playing top end Championship, and then I'm winding my career down instead. And yeah, there's a big challenge ahead for those lads. I want to ask the question because Ryan Mason, look, young man, hot headed. Comes into his post-match interview and says that they gifted us four goals. You can say anything you want. The internet, another world. You can.
The last two, definitely. The first.
The last one, definitely.
Obviously, one, literally the sixth. Yeah. I mean, Romero's challenge for the third one's okay.
No, the first one, let's see how that's a gift in any way.
Oh, the second one. It was just good play by Liverpool.
Second one's fine, yeah.
So it begs the question, how many goals did Liverpool gift Spurs?
I can tell you how many we nearly gifted them.
Yeah, good. Robbo in the first half. Yeah. Definitely a gift.
I don't think we defended well on any of them. I think...
First one's dodgy. First one, Harry Kane had the freedom of Anfield inside our six-yard box. That's problematic.
Well, Van Dijk slipped. Van Dijk, Van Dijk slips.
Van Dijk, Van Dijk position and so slips. Van Dijk falls over and basically has a free pass into the box.
And Robbo decides... I'm better off leaving Harry Kane on his own and trying to close down Perisic.
Well, that was the second one, Son just runs off. It's a great pass, but
he runs off Konate and Trent. The third one, Darwin Nunes, is just, I don't care what you say, just be stronger, lad. Why are you going with it for your foot?
And James Milner gives a stupid
foul.
But we show a free kick minutes later.
I think what happened on the third one in particular was that when we got Salah got a judge to a foul, Ben Davies.
Yeah. We lost that.
Everyone went nuts, including James Milner, and he's fucking stopping this game. Yeah. And just went, I'm going to boot Harry Kane. Which
not like him, is it? Really?
No. And listen, mate, I reckon if you can take a free hit on Harry,
yeah, it's true.
You might take it. Defended really badly. I think all three goals were defended poorly in different ways. The first goal is just that's what's going to happen when Trent's doing this midfield hybrid thing. There's going to be space over there. Mm-hmm. Van Dijk does the right thing. He reacts well. He reads the situation. He's on the other side. He gets there. He just falls over. It's hard lines a little bit.
I don't think we've quite trained yet for that eventuality of what happens when Van Dijk has to go and actually cover for Konate, who's covering for Trent.
Yeah.
And therefore, who then covers... If Robbo then has to cover for Van Dijk, who covers for Robbo? Because I disagree. When you look at how that situation develops... The obvious man for Robbo to go and mark is, as you say, is it Perisic? Did you say who makes the first run? Because there's only two guys back there. Someone's got to go and cover.
Robbo goes to close the cross down. Yeah. Perisic who skins Van Dijk.
Yeah.
But Robertson goes over to cover the guy who's in the middle. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Kane comes in, arrives from behind him. Someone else needs to spot that danger and go and cover for Robertson.
So here's the point. I'd be asking Curtis Jones on the left side of midfield to get back in. But what if a third runner comes in who gets him?
It's just one of those situations. Yeah.
It all stems a little bit from Robertson, who had a bit of a poor game, I think.
There was a couple of times where a
poor pass or a poor touch led to a bit of a scramble, and then that scramble turned into a transition. Robertson Roll's
an interesting one, isn't it?
That might have been his worst game.
It probably was, and I was sort of waxing lyrical about how well he fit into that system, because it is a new role for him, playing almost as the left centre-back of a three when we have Trent in midfield, but there's a lot of talk now about what that looks like moving forward. Do we need to go and get a proper one? Because obviously City, when they do, have like Ake and Akanji, who are natural at centre-back as well.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something we might have to consider.
He does play Son on side for the goal.
I think he gives away a corner, having fluffed his lines a little bit, and that the cop goes absolutely nuts at Robertson. Mm. And there's a moment where he like looks, I can see him, he's looking at the crowd like people are clearly giving him shit. And it was a bit like, he's obviously not used to his own fans going like, what the fuck are you doing, and flipping on him. And then he kind of composed himself and got on with the game. But he did have a little bit of a struggle. And again, it's this balance, isn't it? We're talking about this where we've rebooted the system, the team, and it suits certain players. Mm. Down to the ground, Trent being the obvious, and Curtis being obvious ones, and even to some extent, you know, whoever's playing the left side of forwards, you know, who's playing and Gakpo,
Konate as well, I should say on that.
And I suppose you could say really Fabinho because he's got a bit more cover, a bit more cover in the middle of the park.
And that's the thing, sorry, Fabinho, I did not recognise him in that game, which I don't think was bad, because at all of the times this season, if a goal's gone in, you've looked at where Fabinho is and you thought, what the hell is he doing? Today, the other day, yesterday, sorry, I didn't really notice. I noticed him covering gaps, which was quite good.
I still think there's examples that he could be getting back in quicker, for the goals.
He still looks knackered.
Well, I said this before, I did this on my channel this week, last week, just gone. He's played more minutes than any other midfielder in a season where everyone's saying he looks knackered and he's played too much and everyone's going, all his crap, and he might be, but he might just need someone to take 1,000-odd minutes off him a season. The point we're making is, we've changed the system. It suits certain players down to the ground, but some it doesn't. Some are doing a job for the team, and Andy Robertson is very much doing a job for the team. Konate is doing a bit of a job for the team, and actually the ones who are almost suffering a little bit from it are probably Virgil and Robbo to some extent, and maybe Salah in terms of how much actually extra work he's having to do. As much as it's no bad thing, I think, to make Salah have to really get involved in the game a bit more. But it's going to be telling to see what happens in the summer and what we do. You know, if we buy a left-footed centre-half in the summer, it tells you a lot about what we're doing moving
forward. The other one I'd add to that list in terms of struggling with the new system would be whoever plays on the right side of the midfield in that attacking eight, because Henderson hasn't done it with any great success just yet. Harvey Elliott was okay at it yesterday, but that role in itself takes on a whole new dynamic. So who fills that void would be interesting. I mean, we saw Thiago do it against West Ham for a little bit, but as Steve says, we can't rely on him to stay fit.
The problem with that role is that what do we need from that? Because everyone talks about the defensive stuff, but it's actually not. It's the offensive stuff. It's the going outside Salah. It's breaking lines. It's getting into the box. Mm. And I said this the other day. It reminded me of earlier on in the season when Milner was playing left of the midfield three, and he was doing a functionally great job. It's a bit like someone I remember a mate of mine playing. He was a really good basketballer playing five-a-side with us, and he instinctively knew every position to take up on it, because it's exactly the same sort of basic layout. Go and find yourself some space, make yourself available. But he didn't have the technical prowess to kick a football, so we pass it to him because he was the right person to pass to, but he couldn't kick a ball. And that's an extreme example. I'm not saying Milner's that, but he was doing exactly what was asked of him, but he no longer possessed the skill set to be in those areas of the pitch, and that's how worry for Henderson. Elliot does. He's got all the skill set to be in the final third of the pitch, but he's left-footed for a start, so you don't really want him going outside Mo Salah. And it comes back to the physicality. He lost that when the game switched, and that's when you need a Jordan Henderson to go and dig in for, as he didn't quite have that.
I thought, and again, Henderson, the show, I don't think made Liverpool better. I think the Jota one obviously in the end did, but like there's it's every system you play, it's just got pros and cons, and it'll come down to how everyone does it. What it is doing, it's just giving us the absolute best of Trent Alexander-Arnold again. Another assist, you know, that is. His body language when he assisted the Jones goal was like, I'm the fucking man.
Yeah.
It was very much that, wasn't it? It was like, look, get on me. I am boss me. That's what it was. And fair play to him. It's about time. He felt like, you know, you hear bits of him, and sometimes you wonder if his confidence levels probably did take a hit. He was nowhere near it. He was absolutely brilliant. I still think there's a couple of lads who are getting their heads around it. And I think Darwin's another one. He's come on quite a few times now. I know he got his goal against Leeds, but he looks like he hasn't got a place in this at all.
Leeds game is, and that Leeds goal is how he's going to score his goals, I think, for us. I think this idea that he's going to be a target man, and he needs to work more on that. He needs to hold the ball up better, because that was one of the reasons why we struggled, is because he's not winning. You were saying he doesn't win headers, can't win headers to save his life. At the moment, he's just too wild and too reckless, a bit Tsimikas-like in that way. He's got all the enthusiasm, but none of the timing. But if you put him as a number nine, and you had Trent picking passes to him, there's no reason why that couldn't be De Bruyne and Haaland, sort of 2.0. He's got the right movement in between the sticks and the right natural finishing ability.
Physicality for it.
And also, Jürgen's he's kind of half alluded to this, what Ray's saying. He basically said he's not playing because he doesn't defend well enough. And I think we kind of saw that with that goal. That's a very odd technique to defend your back post with.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for ingenuity, but I don't know, flying karate kicks. When you're 6'5", whatever. I mean, he's massive.
He's not. He's like 6'4". 1'2". He's small. He's not as big as anyone thinks. No, Darwin is. He's shorter than Cody Gakpo. For he's more like he's a little bit bigger than Firmino. He's sort of in between.
Yeah. Fair enough. Maybe I'm wrong, but like when you go and win Eza, like Chloe's right. He's got a lot to go with. He's got lots of positives. He's definitely someone I don't think is benefiting at all, because he's the third choice left winger now. He's probably the third choice centre forward. He's not taking Mo Salah's spot at the minute. No. So you talk about people with points to prove. Yeah. It's on him. It's up to him. If you want to go and play and you want to play every week in the Premier League, then go and earn it, because at the minute, he's fifth choice. And if Roberto Firmino was fifth, he might be sixth choice.
I agree with that.
Just to go back to the Robertson point that we were talking about earlier, he had an absolute shocker of a game, but I did read Jota got interviewed by LFC TV, and he turned around and said, as soon as they equalised to make it 3-3, Andy Robbo came up to me and said, believe, keep believing, go up there, believe in yourself. And that's the leadership skills. Okay, he had an absolute shocking game, but he instantly pulled Jota aside and went, we're going to go long, believe in yourself and gamble.
We're allowed to say someone had a bad game. And it gets misconstrued 100%. Often. Like, you can say he's had a bad season, by the way. You know, I know people think Robertson's had a terrible, terrible season by his standards. I think that's over-egging it slightly, but you might lose bits and pieces from your game as you age, but he's got a winning mentality, doesn't go anywhere. And I think that's what it's on. we've relied on the same lads too much, and that's the problem with the transfer, how we've approached transfers and how we've refreshed the squad. It's not Thiago, Henderson, Fabinho, Van Dijk's fault. It's actually the fault of the lads who've either we've bought in who haven't cut the mustard, or the inability to get rid of them quickly and buy other ones in to do it. And we've put too much reliance on too old and too young. But Robertson is in that period he needs, and we're managing him quite well, actually. You know, I think there's so much more to come from him as a Liverpool player still. Reference this week as well, or last week, Real Madrid. If Luka Modric and Toni Kroos and Karim Benzema were being asked to play three games a week all season, they would be nothing like the players that they are. But actually what they've done is they've gone and bought supportive players around there that they can get by without them starting every single football match. So they do get to pick and choose. That's called having squad balance, and that adds something to what we've got. I want to just talk about Trent, because it's mad to see what a turnaround it's been. Got his first Premier League assist of the season on the 2nd of January in a 3-1 defeat to away at Brentford. And then he has obviously that game on the bench against Chelsea away at the start of this run. Since then, played every 90. Arsenal assist, Leeds 2 assists, Forest assist, West Ham assist, Tottenham Hotspur assist. Absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, people are going on, you know, making the Kevin De Bruyne comparisons.
He's a better passer than Kevin De Bruyne. He's a better passer. A passer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's a better player. Obviously, yeah. I think there's no one in the world who's a better passer than Trent Alexander. I might be hyperbole. He's got everything, mate. He's got all of it. He is outrageous. Obviously, De Bruyne is a world-class footy player. He's one of the best players this league's ever had. Mm-hmm. And he still is. He's still at a level. But, you know, even he's a little bit in and out-ish a little bit at times as well. I think what Trent can do with the ball is... better might be hard. The same level.
It's a Liverpool podcast. You're
right. I don't think it's like, I'm not saying like, you know, something like hyperbole. You might be able to nitpick it, but like, they're both just wizards. They see everything and they spot everything and they're amazing. Like, I'll be honest, the one at the weekend isn't the most difficult ball that Trent's ever going to have to play, but some of them, he is just taking control of footy games. He is just revolutionising what Liverpool are all about. I don't know, obviously, why they decided to change, whether it was just because they were shite and they thought, you know what, let's just do something else. It was always the plan, what the plan is going forwards. There's loads about it, but in terms of, like, you just want the ball at his feet all the time. Every time someone had the ball, I was on the watch along or whatever, I was going, just give it to Trent. I don't care where he is, who's near him. I want feed everything through him. And he did it again. And like I say, there's going to be negatives to it. There's a couple of lads who are, you know...
Jamie Redknapp's not having it, which I thought was really
hilarious.
There's
a couple of lads who are playing, you know, he's playing the piano, and there's a couple of lads who are really carrying it for him. And at some point, that needs looking at, because... You mentioned Ibu Konate, you mentioned whoever plays right of that midfield. There's Andy Robertson. They're almost like sacrificing themselves. They are very much carrying the piano so Trent can play it. But if he keeps doing this, it's well worth it. Yeah. The numbers speak for themselves, the performances speak for themselves. Yeah. You know, I said before, he thought he was the man, and he was the man.
Well, Jürgen said it, and he was pains to stress that Tottenham are a counter-attacking side. He's one of the best in Europe, didn't he, ahead of the game? And then he doubled down in a post-match and was like... And he made it sound like a bit of a criticism, and it is from Liverpool's perspective of, he's like, 3-0 down, they don't change how they play. You met a 3-0, what's meant to happen, because this is how we normally rack scores up, is you blitz early, then you stand firm, and then they're forced to overcommit men. They give up their shape, they give up the game plan, and they throw the kitchen sink at you, and then you nail them on the... And then you become the counter-attacking side. I think back to that famous, is it the Arsenal game, where it's got the tunnel cam of Mo Salah running the length of the pitch, and he's being chased by like five men. That comes about from those kind of situations, and that never really develops until right toward the end of that game for us. I got a really interesting super chat here from Scott Hawks. As always, thank you so much, Scott. It says, the person the system works for is Jürgen. It's setting the team up as a whole for success and make it very clear who can and can't adapt for next season and confirming where we need to upgrade. I think that's a really interesting point, because I think you talk about certain coaches of certain styles. So I remember under Benitez, when it started to go wrong in an 2009-10 season, you know, we blew that league title in the first five games of the season, and then by the time Christmas came around, he's hanging on by a thread, and he goes back to how we played three seasons earlier, and then the fans had to fall off because all of a sudden we're back to watching turgid defensive football and that's not working and we're actually not even winning things. Jürgen doesn't have a formation. He doesn't his style of play is about intensity and getting in people's face and positivity and attitude, and it's like a holistic thing. It's the coaches around them that help set how you go about delivering that for us, and that's one of the beauties of what we've seen is, you know, it's actually Pep Landers' influence in terms of turning around what we've done. But you can recognise a Jürgen Klopp team. Doesn't matter what formation it plays, and that's kind of the real encouragement from this is we have made a huge change and it does need tweaking, but it's very recognisably a Jürgen Klopp Liverpool team that we've been watching, and we haven't really been watching that for a lot of the season. So yeah, I think that's the one of the major things that we can be super positive. Got one here from Felipe H with $7.99 Australian dollars. Thank you so much. As a neutral, he says, sign a left centre back, three midfielders, and you'll be back next season very strong. Probably a nice day out in Dublin next May for LFC incoming. Big up. Was that the Europa League?
Europa League final, Dublin.
It's going to be the greatest day in the history.
If we get to that, honestly,
there'll be lads swimming to it. absolutely outrageous. I get the point on the left centre half bit. Is that, or you buy? I wouldn't be shocked if they sold Tsimikas and bought someone who can play left back. Left back hand. So in a four, he can be a left back. You know what I mean? Because I mean, we're going to speak about the Fulham game later, but like, if Robbo needs a rest, do we trust Kostas to be able to play that role It's a big call. So listen, I think Robertson's been really good up until, I think, he had a bad game. I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater after one game, because I actually think he's done quite well in that position overall since the change. He had a stinker. Sometimes players just drop absolute stinker games, and that was his. He deserves the benefit of the doubt, though.
He does, and he has done well up until that point, I think you're right. But there are also, you look at him sort of fundamentally as a footballer, and his strengths are the fact that he can maraud up the wing, and he's not going to do a lot of that anymore.
He is still allowed to do that,
but a lot of the time, sort of, certainly from a defensive standpoint, he's going to be acting as that first centre-half, and they aren't his main thing. So I do think we need to sort of maybe look at that in the window. And Scott's right, by the way, on that, is because these last few games now are going to give us a real insight into what we need, and it's going to really nail down what we need, because there are certain players reveling in it, Trent being the main one, obviously, and there are certain players that aren't quite au fait with it yet, and I think Robertson might just fall into that second category.
Do you think there's a risk, though, Chloe, as well, of, like, it is the Trent show, and if Trent picks up a knock or gets a suspension or something, it's like, you're sort of having backups for everything.
How'd you back that up, though?
That's what I'm saying. It's a bit like, it's the same issue we had a little bit with Trent Alexander-Arnold, that right back, is that there's no one like him. We're talking about, like, the De Bruyne's of that level. That might be if your whole entire system next season is this, I mean, you've got to have someone who can at least do an impression of it, and that's going to be hard.
We own that already, by the way.
Carry on.
Stephen Bocetic.
Do you think?
100%.
Okay.
I'm convinced of that, by the way. I don't think we need a right. I don't think we need another right back. I think Stefan Bocetic does that job.
He's got some stuff on the ball. Like,
everyone's got Bocetic nailed as like the Fabinho understudy, whereas in reality he's a centre half that we've moved into midfield, and then we tried him in an eight, and he was even better. He's the opposite. Everyone thinks it's got to be you've got to go and find a right back who can play midfield. But fucking good luck.
Do the opposite way around.
Good luck.
I can live with that.
Fair play. I'm slightly worried about that, because, I mean, we can talk about Trent being absolutely unbelievable. It was the areas he managed to, you know, float into. I'm pretty sure for the penalty, the ball comes in at him. He's for some reason on the edge of the box on the left-hand side, and he quickly, just instinctively, does a pass-through ball to Gakpo, and, you know, Gakpo's alert to it. He wins us the penalty. But even that, it's not always a spectacular half-volley passes, switch of play. It's the tight control where a ball can be fizzed in on him, and he's that good. He's already picked his pass before it came to him. And I'm worried that, you know, if you do take him out of it, like several years ago, I was more worried if we were missing Trent than I was if we were missing any of our front three, because he always seemed like the one who'd create everything for us. Everything seemed to go through him. I understand why that's still the case, because he's phenomenal. I don't know, maybe you go back to a 4-3-3 if he gets injured. I'm really not too sure. I think Thiago's got the same, like, he's unbelievable at passing. He doesn't do the same role as Trent. Trent's far more advanced. You know, Thiago keeps the ball moving, very good at recycling it. So yeah, I am slightly worried about that, but I'm hoping that he doesn't get injured because he's been absolutely insane.
If you're going to build your team around a player, build it around a 24-year-old who doesn't have a particularly has a really strong injury record so far. And look, again, we can have this. You can drive ourselves mad, and I know because we've had loads of injury problems with players, and even going back beyond Jürgen, you know, we had it with Fernando Torres, even with Steven Gerrard at times. But like, there's no backup plan for not having Kevin De Bruyne, really. I mean, you know, you can put Foden in, and you can put, but no one really genuinely is an understudy for that. And again, what did City do? They went and bought Erling Haaland, but they buy Alvarez in the same summer. Because, yeah, you're not going to buy another Erling Haaland, but actually you buy something else and that allows you to do something slightly different. Mm-hmm. I think Bajetic can cover a bit of that. And what you're hoping is that maybe that if you've got Thiago can do some of your more creative stuff. Elliot might be able to do it. Ultimately, if you've got goals in the team, I think it covers a multitude of sins. If you've got Luis Diaz, Gakpo, Salah. I've not seen enough of him to play that he plays like that, if I'm honest.
No. He's got the passing range, has he?
I think technically he's quite good. Like I say, you are right. If you're going to build your team around anyone, build around one of the world class player, which he's definitely. Like I say, I went back to performance. I loved his reaction to the assist. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, like, I am the man. Like, it was awesome.
I actually think Bajetic is the shout. Now I'm thinking more and more about it. From the little we've seen of him, and he's only a very small sample size, I know, but just from the way he carries himself more than anything, I'm thinking, the way he goes about his business just suggests that he does have that technical range to maybe do that role. It levels off Trent right now, but as a backup goes, he's not the worst.
Also, if you think back to when Trent first got into the team, he was this very skinny lad, and Stefan Bajetic, he's very skinny, but he can hold his own.
He's a six-footer as well, which helps.
Exactly, but now look at Trent. Trent, you wouldn't want to meet him down an alley anywhere. He'd knock you out. So maybe if Stefan as well gets a bit more weight on him, maybe he can, build into that.
He needs to be thick, two C's.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, if you want more on the Liverpool Tottenham game, wouldn't you? Check out the Final Word show exclusively on redmenplus.com. Or if you are a cult hero or a Wonder Kid subscriber member on YouTube, that show's available for you as well. So yeah, do check it out. You host that one? Mm-hmm. Was it good?
Yes, boss. I had Sam Walker and Alex from Cop TV. Nice. Yeah, it was nice. Yeah. We had a big old laugh at Richarlison, by the way. There was a strong 15 at the end of just laughing at that clown. So yeah.
If you do want to see them do the pigeon dance do I over there and watch it?
I didn't do the dance.
It was either two, but it's fine, do it now.
I shushed.
That's fine. We've all took the piss either way.
Okay, it's fine. More of that. Anyway, right, it was a very short break from us, then we're doing Agony Rant, and we're going to be previewing the Fulham game as well. Hey, stop what you're doing right now. Prepare yourself, prepare your family, prepare your kids, prepare your babysitters, because on Friday the 5th of May, we are having a quiz night, party night at Hotel Anfield, and the tickets are available right now, but your time to get them is running very, very short. If you like Liverpool trivia, if you like Liverpool songs, if you like just laughter and happiness in your life, then come down to Hotel Anfield on Friday the 5th of May. The tickets are available right now on Ticket Quarter. The link will be there or thereabouts. Get involved, get your tickets bought, and come and party with us. It's going to be Liverpool trivia, it's going to be Liverpool games, Liverpool challenges, it's going to be amazing prizes on offer, and Dave Jaggs from the Ragamuffins is going to be playing live music as well. So come and join me, Chris Pajak, for the biggest party night in advance of the Liverpool-Brentford game. And yeah, maybe win yourself some boss prizes, have a good time, and put some smiles back on some red faces.
Hey, it's the Bias Football Podcast.
Grudge and respect of the week. I mean, I don't know the scoreline, but if we could play the video of the time wasting, please, in the Crystal Palace game. It was 4-5-1, wasn't it?
What game is this?
I don't know.
That looks like the play in Watford.
Okay, well, that time wasting in that game from years ago.
You are the worst at this game. You are the worst. Edited 5 weeks ago.
Let me do it again. Right, so we'll just go to me. We're not going to cut this out. I said at the start of the last one that I didn't know the scoreline in the game. I will rephrase that to I don't know the game.
What game this was from?
But
is it not Watford?
I saw some.
It's Watford.
I saw. Watford, I saw that. Some time wasting, which was fantastic. I've got no idea.
Right, you're bad for this game, Dan.
Yeah, Jeff Hurst for his hat trick in the 1966 against West Ham.
Absolutely, what a performance! Yes, come and check out the Bias Football podcast. We'll be streaming it live on Redmen Plus shortly after we finish here. You can get that after the fact in podcast form as well. We're going to have a little bit of chat about the relegation battle once again, of course, and why Man City have just slipped into boring, going to win the title mode. Agony rant time. Has anyone got anything they want to get off their chest?
Once again, referees being, and like not even, who's the bald absolute idiot Think who's on pick. Sky Sports who just doesn't have a clue as well?
Dermot Gallagher.
Thank you.
Dermot Gallagher.
He turned around the other day, and said that the challenge from Skip on Luis Diaz is never, ever a red card. And I just don't understand how you've got him at the top who's overseeing all this and giving his opinions. No wonder referees are getting everything wrong.
Well,
because
Howard
that's
Webb
the standard.
Well, this is the problem. It's actually not even him. It's Howard Webb who's
but
told...
But he's constantly on
but
there
But he's told referees
it.
Like to allow more physical stuff to go. So what's happened now is football's gotten more dangerous because they're trying to create this like idea of being a bit more rough and tumble. The one that always comes back to me on that was Gary Mack being sent off against Arsenal, and he slides in and his feet roll over the ball, and then he makes contact. And I was watching all the analysis of the post match on Sky, and they were like, when he gets a bit of the ball first, it's like, I know, but it's like mid shin.
Mate, if Samir got sent off this year for going over top of the ball, and he got the ball first and went into someone's shin, he got done for that. But I actually think Skip is just lucky to get the ball because Diaz almost flicks it into him.
Yeah.
It's not like he wins the ball. He just fortunately gets a touch and then collides into Diaz's shin. It's a ludicrous challenge.
When both managers, both sets of players, all the fans think you were crap, you're probably crap. Tierney was rubbish. Yeah. He should have sent Skip off. He should have sent Jota off.
Yeah.
There was it was the whole thing. He let too much go. It become a little bit niggly at times. Some decisions that he was given, and then the same thing that happened, he wouldn't give it. The one on Salah just before their goal.
The line he doesn't give.
It was a bizarre performance. And Jürgen is going to get in trouble, and I get it, because you can't go and dance in the fella's face. You can understand. And Ryan Mason was saying, by the way, he wasn't exactly quiet on the touchline himself. He was furious. It was a very poorly official game. He's a bad ref. He just is. And we keep getting him all the time. Like, I think a quarter of our league games this season have had him in them. It's mad.
I saw that. So that was 21% of our games and 25% of his.
Klopp's going to get in trouble for that and what he said afterwards, isn't he?
And then he accused him of saying stuff.
He also basically, he doubled down on he's only got a problem with us line, which is right. I'm not questioning that for a single second. He's absolutely spot on because Tierney quite clearly has a major issue with us. But Klopp went again with that, basically saying he always has this problem. Every time he officiates us, he gets bad decisions.
Can I just say it? Because everyone is universally in agreement that Jota should have been sent off, apart from me. Because I apparently had this thing, and again, it'll depend on circumstances. And I think those are the ones where, and I'm glad he gets a yellow card, because I think there's a degree of common sense about like the pace of play and the things that happen in real time. I'm not suggesting we should go around with boots up and all that, but I often have this thing where it's called football, and you know your natural instinct is to go with the ball with your foot. If someone ducks their head down and tries to head things, for me, that's always like part and parcel of the game. It's like, goes back to the Mane Edison one. Mm-hmm. In reality, if you walked up to someone and that action's led to you kicking them in the face, then that's bang on. But also, if someone runs into the middle of the pitch, it's like the famous Dennis Bergkamp. Is it the Henri statue? I think it is. Or is it the Bergkamp one where he's jump? It's like him jumping and doing that. If another fella had run in and tried to head the ball at that time, Bergkamp kicks his head clean off, gets sent off, and then they never make a statue of that moment. I don't know. I they're the ones that annoy me, because I think there's don't want endangering opponents. Mm. I think Skip's one is far more reckless. It's far more, there's far more force behind it.
Yeah.
Jota's, it's like he's going to nick it. It's not like he's going, he doesn't, like, you know what I mean? Like engage in a stamping motion or all that kind of stuff. The whole thing's fucked is what I'm basically saying. As I would suggest that the Skip one's more violent than the Robertson one, but the Robertson one looks weird.
A career ending thing that can snap his ankle right off the, like, it's just a horrific challenge. Mm. Wasn't given a foul. VAR never looked at it. Like, it's just, no wonder Luis Diaz. At first, I thought it was knee, and I thought, yeah, oh my God, not this again, not again. And no wonder he was screaming in pain. It's a horror tackle. The force that he's came down with, it's all his studs. And I do think Diogo Jota should have been sent off. At the moment that it happened, I didn't even know really what had happened. My head was a bit frazzled with how the game had got. And looking back, it's 100% a red card. But even fouls in the games, the Salah one, Lino is 2 yards away and has not gave it. So why are you in the middle of the park giving it? Why are you making that decision? And if anything, it's Salah being ragged. The reason Salah's arm even hits Davies is because he's got a shirt. Mm. It's ludicrous officiating, and it's always going to be like that. I don't blame Jurgen Klopp for fuming. I don't blame Ryan Mason for fuming. I don't blame the set of fans. It's got to get better, because it very much is a game that, you know, 3-0 up and a red card. Well, it doesn't go back to 3-3, I can tell you that much. Yeah. But 3-3 and a red card to Jota, he doesn't score the winner. Mm. It's officiating taking over the game.
The thing is, though, Steve's right, and Steve sort of just says how it is in terms of Paul Tierney just being a bad referee, and that's what it is, because I think the standard of officiating in this country is pretty dire, and I've said it a few times, to be honest, and the Premier League hails itself as the best league in the world, and rightfully so, is meant to be sort of the cream of the crop, the best product there is going, and that yesterday, as much as there wasn't loads riding on it, it's like, it's not like a Champions League final like it has been in the past, or it's even maybe a top four decider, but it is still a high profile football match, and Paul Tierney's taking charge of it. He's abysmal. Yeah. We've seen it time and time again. In this particular fixture, like we had the Harry Kane thing last time, then he sends Robertson off, doesn't he? He's the worst of a very bad bunch.
Has Michael Oliver slipped down the pecking order or something? Or are we just not in big enough games anymore?
Yeah, that's what it is.
He was in Saudi Arabia. He was the Cristiano Ronaldo game in Saudi Arabia recently.
But also, there was a photo that went, I mean, and if I've got it wrong, people can tell me, there was a photo knocking around on Twitter of Paul Tierney in the United end at Old Trafford as Steven Gerrard kisses the badge.
That's
and
fake,
is that fake?
I think he's a lookalike, to be honest.
Okay, great.
Yeah. He's from
Paul
Wigan.
Nearly.
That's what I think. How he can get
But Wigan, he's not supporting, like, it's like
the
loads of people
in
the mid support.
I think the idea of it being like, there's some things that are conspiracy theories and whatever, but ultimately we don't need a conspiracy theory for Paul Tierney.
It's just crap.
They're all bad, aren't they? They're all bad.
They are.
But we can't solve that all in one hit. The problem when you're right, though, is that maybe that's where we go wrong, is that in myopically focused on individual referees, because every club's got their referee they hate the most. We've actually got more than one, which
can't
probably
we
tells
like Mark Clattenburg, if Everton just managed not to be ref by him.
Remember that, we're close with that with Tierney. We've got to be.
But we're not, with the opposite. He keeps referencing.
No, but I'm saying now we have to be on we have to be on the brink.
Everton just kicked off that much about Mark Clattenburg after he didn't give a penalty against Jamie Carragher. Did he ever have him again? There must be a way where we can just do something to stop having this fella.
Yeah, if you got like a get out of jail, get out of referee card, you slap it down
be,
on the table.
There should be something like, because he's diabolical, he's so bad, and he's arrogant. The way he walked over to Jurgen Klopp to book him was like, look out on me, I'm Paul Tierney. Like, fuck off. Mm. You're ball from Wigan.
The other thing is the PGMOL came out and said, oh, you know, what he said was actually really professional to Jurgen Klopp. Release it then. Mm-hmm. If it was so professional, let us all know. What these need to be mic'd up, because it's like against Spurs years ago, where who was the fat one that didn't know what he was doing?
John Moss. Who was the fat one?
I don't remember that game. That's just true. That's the blanket statement. Who was the fat one?
That's just me in this office every day.
John Moss gave a penalty for Spurs because he didn't know,
he
so he just gave it. He was like, I'm not too sure, so I'm just going to give it. Yeah. We need people mic'd up so they can be held accountable for what they've done.
Matt Carney sends a super chat in and says, what would you prefer, aggressive, dominant players that are prone to bookings, or mild-mannered players that are less imposing but see fewer bookings?
No bookings all the time.
Take the yellows, man. The lad from Sporting, we were into the other day.
Ugarte.
Yeah, he loves a yellow.
Yeah, he does like a yellow, yeah. Get him in. Old yellow.
I was so excited when Naby Keita came in and off the back of like four red cards in our season. I was like, go on.
Turned out he's a different footballer.
Yeah,
altogether.
I don't know who that was.
He just couldn't be arsed playing footy games because he knew he was leaving. It's like when you know you get you're running your contract down at work. I remember having my last day at Comet. God, shows my age, but being let go. And I was dossing around, he went like, you can just get off now if you want and not get paid for it, or you can actually do your job at the end. I was like, oh, fine. Work, I guess. Put a little bit more, in, but fanning around because why not? To the question on Matt, I think we all like people who play on the edge, but I also don't think you can have, I think that again, there's got to be rules around it, hasn't there? Because that's why you end up with a world where people think they can get away with it. It goes back to that, as an aside, that offside rule. Again, gives Spurs so much room for encouragement the other day because they get two decent opportunities in that game that are both offside. Mm-hmm. The flag should just go up immediately because the guy knows he flags the second it breaks down. Yeah. And I know this goes back to the VAR thing of almost like they're trying to let play go, hoping the VAR will be the safety net that protects them all. But what it does is it makes Tottenham feel like they're better, they're more in the game. It makes it feel like Liverpool are on the ropes more than they are. It unsettles the fan base and blah, blah.
Do you think Ryan Mason didn't see the flag go up and just assume they were good chances? Oh, and that's why he thought they were the better team.
Yeah.
The post like five times.
But what he's failed to say is that someone needs to tell Ryan Mason that hitting the post is off target.
Yeah.
And I heard the comments even say, Liverpool protected once again saved by the post. Mm-hmm. You're not that's saved right. by the post. You save the striker is saved from looking stupid like he's missed the target because he's hit the post. It makes you feel like you've had more than you have. Mm. It's a statistical fact that hitting the post does not count as a shot on target.
Have you seen the video of Klopp? And I think Son in the first half, it's the post. And he's like 10 yards offside. Mm. And eventually it gets brought back after everyone sprinted back and he's at the post. And Jürgen literally points at the lino and then just has his head in his hands. Yeah. Like, you just can't believe what's happened.
What made Jürgen was on the floor? And he had some
points. Was it the Salah foul?
Yeah, it was the Salah foul.
There's nobody angrier in the world than Virgil van Dijk when the flag doesn't go up either.
He's had to sprint.
Oh, mate, he's fuming with them.
He's the kind of man who's got like worked out how many sprints he's got left in his career.
Wasted
and having
there.
To use a couple up.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Let's move things on. Let's do the match preview, Liverpool versus Fulham. It is still me, Steve, Chloe and Dan for this one. I'm kind of still in the aftermath, afterglow of Tottenham Hotspur. I don't really want to think about Fulham, but here we are, Steve. At least it's another home game. You know, we're in this little three on the bounce run here.
Is it your four?
No. Mm. I mean, we go to Leicester, don't we, on the Monday away?
Sorry. I'm thinking four wins on the bounce. My head's gone. Sorry. No. I was just really happy
still thinking about Richarlison, the little pigeon idiot. We're in the middle of this sort of home trilogy, as it were. It does look, because of the results of the weekend, like top four is going to be sewn up, Steve. But what we've got now, you know, changing of expectations. We've got to start cementing fifth, and it's interesting to see Fulham, who were very much a team in and around us, have had a real drop off the last couple of months, whereas we've managed to turn the corner. This can't afford to be a stumbling block. There has to be a renewed purpose of, we've said this, it is disappointing not playing Champions League football. It isn't dead and buried, but also we need to start being excited for what comes next. This is another interesting test of mentality for Liverpool.
Yeah, and like you say, all Liverpool get to 71 points and see where it takes you. It might be enough. It looks like it probably isn't going to be enough. You'd be shocked if Man United or Newcastle slip up that many times, but put it on them. Just make them have to do it anyway. You're right. The season started away at Fulham, and it was very early on in that game when me and you sat there like, oh my God. It feels a long time ago now. And we were right to be worried. It turned out from what we saw in that game. So Fulham give Man City a good game the other day. You know, it was a worldie. That was the difference between them, really, wasn't it? So they're a good team. They'll be organised and all that kind of stuff. We are at home. We expect to do it. But I don't think this is going to be an easy game. You know, I wouldn't just be banking on it. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope they just do roll over. And they have had a little bit of a dip, but they're still, fundamentally, they've got players that can hear. Yeah, they're defensively sound. They know what they're doing. They're very well organised. Like, it turns out maybe Marco Silva is a good manager. He might just be Everton again, the curse of that particular football club. You know, it just leaves an absolute stink on you. But I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it's going to be a quite close one as well, quite nervy. Obviously, the Mitrovic thing's done them in big time matches. That FA Cup game against Man United, not only did it ended their season, because they might have had half a chance of winning that competition, perhaps, and lost their best player for 8 games for touching a ref. So it has got a bit pear-shaped for them, but you're right in what you say. You've just got to go and put it on Man United and Newcastle's toes at some point by beating them.
And also there's this thing, Chloe, where Brighton are the real X factor, the unknowns in this European race. We are 4 points ahead at the moment, but they have got 2 games in hand. Three over, actually, you know, Tottenham and Villa ahead of them as well. They're in scintillating form again, out of nowhere. Look like they're totally falling apart, and then they go and battle Wolves at the weekend. Liverpool gets the point. It's like, don't even need to worry about looking up the table or looking down the table. It's about looking too much almost of the opponent that's in front of us. Keep our blinkers on, focus entirely on Fulham and get the job done. And again, the mission is win every game, as Steve kind of says. The mission is make sure we bounce out the season with some positive vibes. Want to go to Anfield in midweek, and I want to see more of what I've seen. Maybe slightly less goals conceded, but yeah, more of the similar same.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, it should have a good atmosphere on Wednesday. I thought the atmosphere at Anfield the other day was quite poor, to be perfectly honest. And a 4-3 win, that should really get everyone up. We've got 2 more home games on the bounce. Get 6 points out of them and just see where you're on the table. Take it game by game. Fulham, surprisingly, you know, even without Mitrovic, haven't been horrific. They beat the Ev, that was boss. I think it was Harry Wilson with a goal there. And they've got players who can hurt us, but they are without Mitrovic. And I saw a clip on Twitter of Pereira. He landed and it looked quite bad. I don't know whether if he is not playing, that's a big boost for Liverpool. But we just need to focus on ourselves. If we can find Trent the gaps and the spaces and we can execute the way we want to, then we can really batter Fulham. You can. You've just got to be careful what comes your way in terms of counter-attacks. You've got to stay concentrated. We got complacent in that first half, which is what caused them to get their goal, but them to also have one cleared off the line. And, you know, Kulusevski also had a one-on-one later on from Robertson where he didn't put it away. We need to make sure that we don't get complacent. We need to stay focused and concentrated, because the more you give the opposition these little moments, the more they can hang on them. And at half-time, they can point them out and say, do this, because you can do it once again. So yeah, we need to focus on ourselves, put in a solid performance, hopefully don't concede as many. I'm really feared off the 4-3 win in the last minute, because that gives you a lot of confidence.
The goals are back, but we're still giving far too much encouragement.
That's the thing.
Forest get 2, Tottenham get 3, we give 1 away to West Ham. Our goals are back, don't get me wrong. We've, you know, 4s and 3s and 2s.
Teams
and
feed off that as well, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and it almost feels a little bit like the Jürgen's very start. You know,
I was making the 17-18 comparisons earlier on. That's what it feels like. It feels like a team that's got enough goals to go and blitz their opponents, and we've got options to do that. I mean, think about the start of that 17-18 season. We had Coutinho in the mix in the first half as well. So we had people remember Coutinho as a midfielder. He rarely did
play left wing one.
We played exactly. We had him and Mane in a bit more rotation in that, and so we had the options to go and really hurt teams. And now we've got that, and that's what this run-in's going to be based on. I think is that there's clear issues that still need addressing in the squad, just in terms of bodies, the transfer market. But I said this in the summer, we spent the money rebooting the attack and now we've actually got that attack available to us. That's what its job is, you know. That's where all the freshness of all the vigor is in this side. And that's the kind of the beauty about what we saw at the weekend. The real strong takeaway going into Fulham is I don't know who our starting three are going to be. I could make a strong case for two options, and it could yet be another one on top of that. You've got a lot of lads who are actually in really, really good form, and that should be enough. Because let's be honest, I know Spurs are a mess, but the same way that West Ham were a better team than Leeds, but we still managed to do them away from home, Fulham are a worse team than Tottenham Hotspur, we should be able to have enough.
They are, they definitely are, especially without Mitrovic. We spoke about him quite a bit already because he was the X factor for them all season. He was a lot of the reason as to why they were overachieving so much. And since he's been out of the side, they have taken a little bit of a dip. You'd say they're on the beach, but then the performance against City suggests they are still fighting. But listen, I think Liverpool just need to take care of business now. That's where we're at in terms of our season between now and the end. And I think on the attacking point, you're right. We've got our attack sorted. Like, there's them lads. They're going to be the lads next season as well. The midfield, we're not so sure about. There's sort of little buds of hope in there with the youngsters coming through. Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, Pacetic as well. And the defence might need addressing too. But yeah, I think we're going to see. It'd be nice if we could keep it tighter at the back and not offer opposition more encouragement, but I think we are going to see maybe more games like we've seen yesterday. It's going to sort of be the Norwiches of years gone by and Bournemouth games that were just chaos, because that's where we're at. And I think we're still trying to find our way in this new system with the personnel we have available. But yeah, I think, like Chloe says, you know, these little run of games at Anfield, if the players were starting to tire at all yesterday in this little run, there's nothing like a 94th minute winner in front of the Kop as a little shot in the arm, is there, to go again between now and the end of the season?
Let's talk about some of the options then, Chloe. First off, Hendo, Elliot, Hendo back in?
Yeah, I probably would, just from the off, you know, if we need something more. Henderson, I think defensively does a little bit better in that role. He gives license, and he's obviously right-footed, which really helps Mo Salah out. He digs balls in from the right-hand side when he overlaps. I'd bring him back in. I don't think Harvey Elliott played horrific. He just got a little bit lost in the game, that's all. And he'll get his chance again. Jordan Henderson's, you know, getting on now. So I'd slot him back in. I'd ask Curtis Jones to go again. I really would. I think Jota deserves to come back in, and Gakpo deserves to start. So that means that my front three is Salah, Gakpo and Jota.
I think the Jota thing is that's going to be the real hard one, because I can see how Jordan Henderson does just come back in. I don't think there's anything wrong, because it's Fulham, if I'm being honest, and we're at home. I would probably give Elliot another go and see what he can do, because again, we know what Jordan Henderson can do. We know what he's bringing to the table. Another game, another 45, 60 minutes, whatever, won't do Harvey Elliott's development any harm. But the actual real difficult one today is that Diaz Jota, because I thought Diaz was absolutely sensational. You know, he's everything our side's lacked since he's been out of the team. But Diogo Jota's also something that he is a predatory clinical finisher. That Jürgen's gonna have to rack his brain a bit this week.
Yeah, he's got to get out of jail free card. If you can just say to Diaz, We're taking it slow with you. I mean, you can start at the weekend with Brentford, and we'll take it in turns. We don't want to rush you back. That's his guard if he can't on that one, if he wants to, if he needs it. Because you're right, there's four forwards there who are all more than deserving to play. I go back to the Henderson Elliott thing. I'd go Elliott again. I don't think Henderson's been that good, if truth be told. I don't think he's played well for a few weeks. I think he hasn't. I get it, it's been hard graft over there, but I don't think he's even been particularly great at it. So I wouldn't mind giving Harvey another go at it, but I expect he'll go back to Henderson again. Harvey to go, he hasn't played, and he looked knackered the other day when he went off earlier.
Yeah.
Liverpool looked tired. I thought at the time they were both the right subs, because Diaz and Harvey looked like they were starting to flag a little bit. He's got an interesting one at left back. Does he trust Costas? Does he want to give Robertson another go? Because if you're basing it on last performances, Robertson couldn't have any qualms about being dropped. It's just whether you think Costas has got it in him to do to be that the more left of a three rather than a left back. Other than that, I think that's about it really. It's enough of a turnaround, you think, Sunday to Wednesday night, that it's not horrendous. But he's also got Brentford to think about. I wonder if he, again, I don't know how hard you're thinking. It might literally just be next game, we'll see what we've got. But there are, I'd definitely be keeping Salah and Gakpo together. So you're right. If it was me, I think I've said it all along. Jota gets in my team, and I always figure it out. But you are right. Luis Diaz looked really, really keen for it. But like I say, the fact that he got a whack, the fact that he went off, and the fact that he's just coming back, it almost you can rest them without dropping them. You can say, "Hey, we're looking after you." Where you know what I mean? It's an easier conversation to have because this time, maybe it start of next season, if everyone's fit and available and firing, there's two lads not playing who are going to be gutted. So that's what it's where you want to be. But there are hard decisions.
The midweek thing helps in that, doesn't it? Dan, yeah, because 100%. It means you get to say, as Steve's saying there, you're going to be start. You're getting 60 to 60 between 60 and 80 in this game, and then the other one's getting a sub, and then we'll look to flip it at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a massive help. It actually takes a lot of pressure off Klopp in terms of having them conversations and making those decisions. It's almost, you'd imagine it'll be dictated to a lot of it in terms of the fitness side of things from those people. But yeah, I would personally like to see Harvey Elliott go again. I'd like to see him get the hour and then Henderson the half an hour with a view to maybe Henderson coming in for the Brentford game from the start. I think Diaz should come out of the side, not based on his performance, but based on sort of that easing him back in. I think we still need to ease him back in and be very careful with what we're getting from him between now and the end. And also Jota, listen, comes in, gets the winner. Like, go again, my mate, go again and build on it.
Do you think that, like, this conversation, what people are saying, I'd rather not be in Europe if you're not going to be in the Champions
League.
Stupid
conversation, by the way.
It is. It's stupid. This is the point now, is that Liverpool don't want you to be playing 38 games next season. You can't have a big squad if you're playing 38, 40 games.
We can't do a lot of the things we want to do if we don't have that many games.
And the finance. But I'm just thinking, like, this is where, if you do get your Europa League, Mo Salah might not have to kick a ball in the group stage, just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But you can, there are ways.
That rotation.
It also means that when someone comes into the side because of a knock or an injury, someone's ready and going. So it's easier to just say, you know, for example, Jota got a whack against West Ham, so there's Luis Diaz. Luis Diaz is on, and he's played a few games and he's had minutes under his belt. Yeah. You can't just go from not playing every week to, and then you're just in. No. That's how you end up like with players who will take games to get
off. At the risk of being a Europa League apologist, there is a world where it changes the dynamic in a positive way for Liverpool. And I know everyone's focused on the money that revenues the Champions League brings and the calibre of player, which I think is a little overstated in so much as, if Jürgen said it before, they actually don't want players who only want to be at us because we're at the top, because that's not the mentality you want. You want people who want to be, who are keen to get you, push it on. There's a world where Kevin Keller's the Europa League goalkeeper, so he sticks around for another year for that. There's a world where all the lads who've played too much football, the older lads, you're right, it means you don't play Thiago, you don't play Henderson, you don't play Virgil van Dijk, you know, and these, and you don't play Mo Salah.
Simicast over Robert.
Exactly, and that gives you, all of a sudden, you almost get an extra season at a higher level back out of these players, whereas the Champions League, you're not going to not play van Dijk and Salah in the Champions League games, because they would demand that they're in there, and that helps you then build for what comes afterwards, but also helps protect these lads so you do get better out of them in the games that they play.
That's why this is a game, like you say, and it isn't what we wanted, but I do think it's quite important they finish fifth. You're right, Tottenham and Villa losing obviously the weekend. Brighton are still hanging around. They've got a lot of games to catch up though. So we saw the other day the effects that they had. When they had to go weekend, midweek, albeit they had played extra time, caveat, but like, they didn't look great at it, you know what I mean? Because they're not used to it yet. A lot of these players are used to this now, going and going and going again at the business end. We're chasing something different, but it's the... In terms of like the looking ahead to the Fulham game in particular, the only other couple of questions I've got is, at what point does Fabinho not play? Is there any point where is he just in now till the end of the season?
Is it Henderson for him? Is the question there? I think
again it was meant to be Thiago, and then that's kind of
it'd be a bad Jettison.
And is Alexander Arnold just in every game now?
Probably. Don't have another option there, do we? Yeah. But for me, I think you are right in that, and no one's even said the name Darwin Nunes as well, which is a different story altogether. Mm. But just on the point about Europe, I think I certainly want to finish fifth, and if anyone's in any doubt whether we want to finish fifth as a collective. Just look at Jurgen Klopp and Anfield's reaction to what happened yesterday. Yeah. Like, it's got to be. It just has to be fifth.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just on the Henderson-Elliott thing, I was just having a quick look because I knew this again from the video I did last week about minutes played. Henderson and Elliott are running at about the same total minutes on the season, fractionally more. It's like 30, less than 27, I think, 23 more for Jordan Henderson so far. They've been in rotation kind of all season long. So you can go one or the other, really. I don't think it really matters too much. There might be a stylistic issue, but that's what you've got your substitute bench for. Yeah. But the thing that Elliott's got going for him, Henderson's got 3 assists this season, Elliott's got 5 goals and 2 assists. Get a little bit more in the Champions League and Cups, of course, but we know you're getting with Harvey is you're getting more attacking input. And what I want to see from this running now is that if we can't be trusted to keep the door shut, we need to go and blitz some teams. And I think Elliott could be a key component.
I also think, mate, again, I don't know how far Jürgen looks, but if he's looking at the next two games and picking one for each, I mean, Brentford, we saw the dangers they caused, offset plays and stuff. Like, if he's thinking, you know, heighten the team, maybe Henderson plays there because Harvey's only a little bless him. So maybe it's
we've got a 9-day break after Brentford as well, haven't we? There's 9 days there.
Yeah, because it's the Monday night.
Yeah, so there's a good gap in terms of fitness wise. I'm thinking if there are question marks, we do have a nice little break afterwards.
Yeah, I don't mind whether Harvey Elliott starts or not. I'd be happy to see him again. I just thought Henderson, because Henderson got a rest. He didn't come on till late. And Diaz, I'd love to see Diaz, but I was so shocked to see him start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. He had 2 9 minutes and a 35. I did not think he was going to start from the off. I assumed that the knock that Jürgen Klopp mentioned in his presser about Jota was quite a big knock. It must have been
a little bit, a few days.
Exactly. So that is why I assumed Darwin Nunes, Luis Diaz started, which is why
the contempt. No, he's not on your good list, is he?
I think Jota's back was still struggling.
Win a couple of headers, and I might turn it round a little.
He has scored a header this season.
No, he came on and look, I love him. I think he'll be boss. He's not yet fit into the system. But he did not win a single header that was put up to him when you needed him to. And he just out-jumped people, but didn't really win a header.
Like you've not let this go. You've had like some time to chill on this.
But if Diaz starts, I'd be really excited.
Okay, sounds well. Good. Yeah, the good thing is we've actually got a few options here. Yeah, unless it's Fabinho.
It wasn't that long ago when we were like, "Can Ben Doker do a job?" Remember? but genuinely, we had to because that's where he was.
It's the first. It's like the warning signs of when your side things aren't going well and you start looking for wild solutions to it. Mm-hmm. It's like all the people going like starting at Phillips centre half, and it's like fucking stupid. It's like, you mean there's a reason?
I didn't say starting at Phillips.
You were like, I'd be giving that Phillips
over
a
Joe Gomez.
Exactly, but Joe Gomez was who was available. Like, you know, so. There's just these things. I mean, everyone thinks them. There's got to be a radical answer. Like, bring some mad player in from the cold. You bring them in when you've literally got no one else. Ben Doak will have his time, but you're right. That's where we were at then. Where we're at now is we've actually got a bunch of senior lads who are all fit and hopefully pulling in the right direction.
Where's Bobby on this? Because he said he was going to miss 3 games, didn't he? That they're the 3 now, so I wonder if is he
should still be back
with
this
a
week
muscle injury. So he didn't say anything.
He needs a good sign off, doesn't he? He can't just go out with a whimper like this.
I mean, yeah, but it depends. What are we doing? What are we going for? I think he can contribute. Carvalho's the one that's the question in that, because Carvalho's sitting in Firmino's place on the bench.
He's off in the summer. Jürgen's comments the other day, that was enough. We'll talk about it in the summer, kind of, almost like.
Is that what he said?
He said, we haven't spoken about it now, basically.
He was talking about going low, isn't he? That might be him.
He did also praise his levels of training.
Back on the bench.
He's really good in training. Buy him.
But we've talked about this, though, haven't we? About like the lads who are playing. You know, we're given game time to the fit and available lads who've got more to grow and more to improve upon. If Firmino is fit and comes straight back in for Carvalho, it's a little thing where it tells you that Firmino's still very much the guy, and rightly so, to be fair. Okay, score predictions on this one, Dan.
Liverpool 3-0.
2-1.
3-2.
Wow, I can do without
two set piece goals from Fulham.
Harry Wilson haunting us?
No, someone's going to kick it into the space where Trent isn't there, and they're going to just pull it across to someone to tap it.
Yeah, right. Very, very
well. But Trent will get another assist.
4-1 to Liverpool, but Harry Wilson will score a free kick, because that's
fine.
I'm fine with that. Like, genuinely fine. Let Harry Wilson score a free kick.
Is there anyone we hate at Fulham and we'd like to get an equaliser, and then you can't hate anyone at Fulham, can you, really? Really.
Willian?
Pretty unhateable.
No, I don't really hate him. I actually rate him, to be honest.
Again, I can't hate everyone who scores against Liverpool. I have a long list of hate. I'd be a very hateful person.
It's a good place to start, though.
Little audition, audition for Paulinho as well.
I love Paulinho, you know.
Okie dokie. Right, sounds. We're going to wrap things up there. Do come and check out the Bias to Football podcast over on redmenplus.com. Always a very, very good, fun show where we basically look at the Premier League and football in general from a PR by Scouse Liverpool perspective.
Talking about Scouse.
Oh, yeah. Chloe's got the Scousest of webs on at the moment.
Not 110. Sorry to disappoint to everyone, but.
On
yeah.
Run, lad.
On cloud.
On cloud.
Sounds. That is the podcast for this week. We'll be back with another one next. And thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening on podcasting service, give it a 5-star review, drop a like on YouTube, and have a boss week.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.